Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I am Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. 1 year ago, we interviewed a former NASA Saturn mission lead, Dave Coppedge, on headlines from his Creation Evolution website over at crev.info. So what an honor to have back on Real Science Radio, David Coppedge. Welcome, David.
Good to be back with you, Bob.
Well, I'd love to review the headlines on your site, crev.info, but first, to remind the audience, we interviewed you back in 2015 about your time at Caltech with the Cassini space mission when you were working for NASA, and I'd like to congratulate you on the extended report on your story published by ID the Future. Wow, what a great program.
Yeah, they had actually recorded those back after the trial, but never used those interviews. So I reminded them that they existed, and they thought they would bring them out of storage and put them to use.
Wow. And the title of that, in case anyone would like to look for that, we'll link to it from our show summary at rsr.org. But the title of that excellent series is NASA on Trial, The Persecution of David Coppedge. So then, just 1 year ago, David, in early 2016, we covered the news stories on your website, and now we're ready to do that again for 2017. So you and I have talked through just a small number of your latest reports. The first one is on the moon and how it got there. You'd think they'd have figured out that one by now. And then on Pluto and the largest asteroid series, and amazing recent discoveries. And once again, I love this report you give, Mammals Ate Dinosaurs. They've got more proof of that. And then biomimetics, which is how even atheistic scientists look at organisms to find examples of brilliant design, brilliant engineering. And then maybe if we could, a few shows on, they're all related really, the Nazi medical atrocities and the elimination of the need to kill unborn children by using adult stem cells. Actually, there's never a need to kill children, but now they could use adult stem cells. And then finally, the scientists who are so upset that they're losing access to the harvested baby body parts that we learned about in those viral videos about Planned Parenthood. So, David, those are the articles that I'd love for you and I to review.
Well, sounds very stimulating, so let's get into it.
All right. And first, even before that, you have quotes from your readers of crev.info that you've collected. Could we start with a few of those?
Well, yeah, I just thought I'd mention that we get really nice comments from readers like one called it the highlight of my day, and I marvel at your ability to crank out these articles day after day. In fact, I think we're one of the busiest creation websites in terms of news reporting that is anywhere out there.
Absolutely, yes.
Another one said, it's merely the best, most up-to-date, insightful, witty, whimsical creation evolution thought minder website out there. So I thought I'd share that.
Yeah. Yeah, just awesome. And we second those remarks. So, David, you have an article about the moon. Moon bombarded by crashing theories. And how the moon got there. And you'd think they'd have that one down, since it's the closest of all the celestial bodies. We've even walked on the moon. Yet, there is a deep mystery to the secular scientific community on how the moon got there. And there's a latest
development. Here we're approaching the 50th anniversary of the Apollo missions, which were largely put together to explain how the moon got there.
Hmm. Yeah, what a great point. In fact, so much of mainstream science is to figure out how the universe got there, how life started, how the moon got there, how stars form, how planets form. And the more they study the problems, the greater and more impossible the problems appear. Oh, and by the way, you mentioned the 50th anniversary. There is a film in the theaters now called Hidden Figures. Have you heard about that film?
I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it. It's about some of the women mathematicians, is that right? That,
yes.
That supported the space program?
Yes, at NASA, 1961. And it specifically follows the story of three black women. And this is in Virginia, where the state said, we don't care what the federal government says. We are not going to segregate. And at NASA, there were colored bathrooms and regular bathrooms and colored water fountains and regular. This is in Virginia. And there were colored coffee pots and regular coffee pots. And this one brilliant mathematician, I mean, she has a building named after her today. She really was significant in helping, you know, John Glenn get into orbit. And she had a drink out of the colored coffee pot, and she had to walk a half mile across the campus to get to a colored bathroom, even in the pouring rain.
What a shame. Yeah, that's terrible.
Yeah, just absolutely horrific. And thankfully then, you know, NASA has been one of many agencies that have condemned that part of our history and worked to change that. But what a great film, just to say that. So the moon. How could there be yet another theory on the origin of the moon? And how could our mainstream science journals allow a paper to slam the current theories in favor of a brand new theory? You'd think they'd figure this stuff out by now if they figured all the rest of the universe out, which they want us to believe.
Well, wait till you hear the latest idea. I mean, it's even worse than the previous one. Okay.
Well, currently, the reason there are so many theories on the origin of the moon is because none of them work. And so you only have the least horrific theory, which becomes the most popular. And so the idea that a Mars-sized object slammed into the Earth and the debris formed the moon, there are enormous problems with that theory and all the other theories.
Exactly. I mean, you have to get the impact angle just right, the impact speed just right, and it's so finely tuned, it's equivalent to a miracle. But now they've got a new hypothesis just published that requires 20 moon to Mars size objects to strike the Earth, flinging debris in all directions that becomes the moon.
And this is published in the National Enquirer or the Star? Oh, no, this is in Nature.
Nature Geoscience, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And they really do, in this paper, they slam the existing most popular theory, pointing out that it violates the most fundamental law of the conservation of angular momentum. You know, if you did have an impact and debris was thrown off, it would be at a highly irregular orbit, high eccentricity. But the moon's orbit is, what, within a couple percent eccentricity, very regular, so that the tides of the Earth are helpful and predictable. And so that we don't get, you know, destroyed by tidal waves every day.
Right, and it's at the right distance to form these amazing solar eclipses, like we're going to have one later this year in August.
Yeah.
And sometimes it covers a little bit more than the sun, sometimes a little less, but it's very small percentage change.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the eclipse in August, it'll be especially visible up in Wyoming. And some of our friends will be going up there to view it. I'm not sure exactly where it's most viewable, but you want to go where it's least likely to have clouds and bad weather. And so,
yeah, I'm aiming for Casper, Wyoming myself. That's right on the center line. They have a lot of events there.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a zoo. But
so I didn't know you were going, David. We were thinking of going with some of our friends who are going. So I'd like to consider maybe meeting up with you.
That would be fun. Yeah, I got to see one in Baja, California in 1991, and it was really spectacular. So I highly recommend, don't miss this if you can see it.
Yeah, we took our Bible tour of Turkey 3 weeks, taking, you know, the journeys of the Apostle Paul, retracing his steps and learning so much about the Old Testament, the New Testament. And midway through our trip, our tour guide said, well, we're getting out of the bus, and too bad we don't have the right equipment, because right about now there's going to be a solar eclipse. And if we had the right equipment, we could look at it. So we get out of the bus, we take our backpacks off, and we all pull out our special filters, you know, the welder's filter number 4 or whatever it is. And he said, you guys are ready for this. You are the weirdest tour group I've ever had in my career. And so, yeah, we sure were ready. The fact that the moon gives us a perfect solar eclipse, it helped to elucidate for us the sun's beautiful corona, its outer atmosphere, and that really unlocked the study of the heavens. So if the
we talked about that in our Illustra film, The Privileged Planet, and you know, Guillermo Gonzalez did a study of the whole solar system looking, is there any other place where this happens? And he only found one other place. It was one of the small moons of Saturn called Prometheus, that if you're in the cloud tops of Saturn looking at the right time, you might get a half second of total eclipse, he figured. But then our spaceship Cassini went there and found that Prometheus is potato-shaped, so it never would cover the sun exactly.
Right.
So we are unique. The only place in the solar system that has these total eclipses is where there are intelligent observers to appreciate it.
Yeah, and when the Bible says the heavens declare the glory of God, and God put people on earth to be the observers, to see his glory, so it makes sense that earth would be the place where you could see this.
Absolutely. I mean, you can call it a coincidence, but there's just so much amazing detail about this coincidence and how it opened up our ability to study the far reaches of the universe by the discovery of helium and studying Einstein's relativity and other things. It's hard to believe that it's just a chance.
Well, yeah. And to get that, the moon is about 400 times closer to the Earth than the sun is. And to get that perfect eclipse, it needs to be about 400 times smaller in diameter than the sun, and it is. We have quite an article on our website, rsr.org/fine-tuning, and it goes through the tuning of the universe, of the solar system, and then of the Earth, and it is all stunning.
Yes.
Okay, so you were serious when you said that Nature Geoscience just published a paper saying that instead of a big impact, there were 20 small objects that in succession hit the Earth, and they threw up debris, and that debris over time collided and became the moon.
Yeah, believe it or not. Now, I mean, if it was improbable to get one moon to Mars-sized object to strike the Earth just right, imagine 20 of them. I mean, they're just multiplying the miracles required.
Yeah. You know, and the one, if one hit, like I mentioned, the eccentricity of its orbit would be so extreme. So typically, they bring in a third body so that its gravitational pull on the debris in the newly forming, the nascent moon, would then put it in its beautiful orbit. So now you got 20, but let's say you had all these little moonlets now in orbit around the Earth. When they collide, would it be normal based on physics that they would merge? Is that the normal behavior in space?
No, we know from physical science that particles don't accrete together easily. They tend to bounce off each other and actually grind each other down rather than form larger bodies. That's a major problem with the origin of the planet. So they just assume that this stuff is going to accrete, and that's reserved for future research, obviously.
Right, future research. So that typically, if two rocks in space are approaching each other, their mutual gravity will speed them up, and then they'll shoot by each other at a faster speed. But if they hit, typically they break apart into many pieces, all of which disperse.
Right. You have to have a body grow to the size of 1 to 10 kilometers in diameter before it will have enough gravity to bring in material that will stick. Before that, it's a major problem getting particles to stick together.
Mm. Okay, so that's the moon, and like I said, they want us to believe that they know how all the stars formed, and all the galaxies, and all the planets, and our sun, but they can't even explain the origin of the moon, which we've walked on.
Yeah, and you think about from a distance, the Earth is this tiny speck. I mean, imagine the sharpshooting required by chance to be able to get these objects to hit this speck out there just right, and not to blow it to smithereens, but to have it.
And, you know, secular scientists mock the founders of geology, who were pretty much all flood geologists. And they mock us and they say, reality is uniformitarianism. You can't have catastrophism where a catastrophe explains the Earth. But when you go to the solar system, they are repeated catastrophists. They're addicted catastrophists. They have planetary collisions explaining the surface of virtually all the planets and the moons, some of them many times over, and now even Pluto yet again, just over and over and over. So now they want the Earth hit 20 times to explain the moon.
Yeah, I mean, Spike Thesaurus, you know, in his film, his excellent films, mocks that the impacts are their Swiss Army knife to explain everything.
Yeah, he keeps having this trumpet fanfare every time NASA will say, well, how did the surface of Io get this way or whatever it is? Every planet and most of the moons. And they'll say, obviously, there was a collision, or they'll have multiple planetary size collisions they're talking about. It's really ironic. Okay, the next story you have is on Pluto and the solar system's largest asteroid, Ceres. Astounding discoveries on both. So let's do Pluto first. What have they found?
Well, Pluto has turned out to be a creationist friend, I think, because, and it's just like every planet that NASA visits, they didn't predict what they found and they're surprised by it. Mm. And so what we see at Pluto are evidences of things that could not be billions of years old. You see evidence of active surfaces, cryovolcanoes, glaciers moving around, and ice moving and jumping to the poles, all kinds of planetary cartwheels, you know, going on.
Yeah, and David, when they first published the images from New Horizons back in, what was it, 2015, they were absolutely stunned by what the surface looked like.
Yes.
And what we did at Real Science Radio is we made a meme. We put up a graphic showing what they predicted it would look like a few months before the International Astronomical Union versus the actual photos. And what they thought it would look like is a ball beat up by 4.5 billion years of collisions and covered with space dust. So it's dark, dingy, and dirty. And what it looked like was huge swaths of Pluto, as pristine as could be, beautiful white snow, ice, just a shocking opposite of what they thought.
That was a great plan. Yeah, good. I'm glad you did that, because I wish we had done that for every planet. In fact, we should go back and show, here's what they predicted at Titan, here's what they predicted all over the place, and here's what they found, the exact opposite.
Yeah, well, in fact, NASA's expert on the rings of Saturn points out that they're obviously young. And you ask, well, why would you say they're young? And he says, look how clean they are. They're not filled with billions of years of dust. They're beautifully pristine. And so these basic observations, time and again, contradict at a fundamental level the expectations of the secular scientific community. So something else at Pluto, you write about what they believe is a liquid ocean under the crust. Now, Pluto's far from the sun. And so what would liquid water, and they say slushy or a liquid ocean, what would it be doing under the crust? That's another dramatically unexpected conclusion.
Right, because Pluto is out there all by itself. It doesn't have any strong gravitational attractions with any other planets or large moons.
Yeah, it has its moon, Charon. But they take that into account. It doesn't explain this in any way.
Right. Any liquid should long be gone. And yet they're saying it's not just Pluto, but other objects in the Kuiper Belt may also have liquid oceans, they say.
To me, that's thrilling. I'm ecstatic about it. We follow a certain line of thinking about the creation in the book of Genesis And we noted in January of last year, 2016, there was a paper published in the Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, one of the most prestigious astronomy journals in the world. And it says the uncanny orbital characteristics of the TNOs, that's all the bodies out beyond Neptune, the trans-Neptunian objects. And it says one way to explain them is that they're young. They're young.
He actually said that?
Yes, that they originated in the recent past. And since that paper was published, they found a major TNO that orbits the sun retrograde. It's going the wrong way. So their desperate Planet X, which they think is like 10 times as big as the Earth, that might explain some of those TNOs. They've already admitted, well, that would explain this TNO.
Oh, so, my goodness.
Yeah, the secular origins theories, as NASA's expert on exoplanets has stated, we used to have a beautiful theory about the origin of the solar system. The only problem with it is that it's totally wrong. So that sort of sums it up.
Guess how they explain Pluto's strange geology?
How?
Da-da-da-da. The impact.
Another impact. And it has to be a recent impact for the subsurface ocean to still be liquid.
Right. I know. Another finely tuned impact just by accident explains what we see. So we see a pattern here, don't we?
Yeah. And like you said, the Earth is this tiny blue ball, a little speck from far away. Imagine how small Pluto is and how far apart the distances are from the different heavenly bodies way out there, that far from the sun. Okay, so then we get to Ceres. Ceres has sort of a related issue.
Yeah, they call it an ancient ocean world. But how are you going to have water survive on Ceres? Any water ice on the surface should sublimate away very quickly, but they're actually finding surface, not water, but ice that gets in these cold traps. And there's a similar process that they theorize goes on that they also theorize happens at Saturn's moon Iapetus, where volatile molecules heat up and hop on the surface because gravity holds them down, but they move and they land in places where it's cold enough for them to stay there. Typically at the poles or in the dark
craters,
areas of Iapetus. But so that's what they say is going on here. But even so, even if they have water ice on Ceres at the poles and in permanently shadowed craters, there's still radiation that hits those volatiles from stars and from outer space. And so they shouldn't last for billions of years is the bottom line.
And they believe that these bodies are leftovers from the formation of the solar system, the early solar system. And it's interesting, you quote from Nature News, this is October 2016, that there's a growing awareness of Ceres as an active wet world. So we have another page on our website, Transient Events. So rsr.org/transient events. And all the planets in our solar system, the moon has many lunar transient events. The Earth has so many geological features that we're told are millions or tens of millions of years old that just happen to be collapsing as we're sending tourists to look at them. And these things are all happening now while we're looking. And if everything were billions of years old, it should have come to a stasis point where in 1,000 years, you wouldn't see one of these things, let alone all of them all the time.
You know, a lot of this came about because of the work of Lyell and Darwin 150 years ago, and scientists are just clinging to these outdated Victorian myths and trying to interpret modern things through that lens, and it's not very scientific.
Agreed. So another article you have is about mammals eating dinosaurs. We did this a few years back, our show, 432 Mammal Species in dinosaur layers that have been excavated, their fossils. And then there were 433. And now I got to read this paper more carefully. This looks like it might be 434. And this particular mammal, like a mammal found before it, was found eating a dinosaur, or they had evidence that it ate dinosaurs.
Yeah, this one is particularly interesting because they measured from its skull, they measured the bite force it has, and it had the most powerful bite, pound for pound, than any other mammal on record, they say, alive or dead.
Well, yeah, and you know how Darwinism, the general picture, is that over time, organisms become more and more adapted and more proficient. They get bigger and stronger and better at survival. But the example you just gave, that the mammal with the strongest bite lived early on, not today. And we did a show on teeth where teeth from the fossil record from tens of millions of years ago are better physiologically than grazing animals have today.
Yeah, and listen to the surprise in this quote here. Instead of a shrew-like mammal meekly scurrying into the shadows of dinosaurs, this badger-sized mammal would have been a fearsome predator on the late Cretaceous landscape, even for some dinosaurs. So they didn't actually find dinosaur bones in its stomach or anything, but they figure that it probably munched on small dinosaurs.
Okay, because the previous account that we gave was actually, they actually did find dinosaur bones in a mammal's stomach in this fossil, which is so interesting. From, they claim, 130 million years ago. We link to one story about it in National Geographic News. But in this account that you're linking to, they say that this creature was a marsupial. So a marsupial carries its young in a pouch, right? And they say the strata that they found it in was about 15 million years older than when they thought marsupials first evolved. And here at this show, we call this the big squeeze. Like they just found out with whales, you know, there was only 10 million years for them to make all those astounding changes from a land animal back to a creature that lives in the sea. And now, with the latest finds, they think maybe it was only a million years that they got a whale fossil so old that maybe there was only a million years available. And that's absurd because of all the thousands of engineering changes, if not millions, that have to take place.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's amazing. In our Palustra film, Living Waters, we talk about how it would take 100 million years to get two coordinated mutations. And yet they think a whale evolved from a land animal in at most 9 million. And now you're saying 1 million. So yeah, it's game over.
Yeah. And by the way, we link to that find at our website, rsr.org/whales, where we list all the problems with the whale evolution story. But yeah, what a fabulous video. That was Living Waters, right?
Living Waters.
Oh, man. And then the animation about the cross-current heat exchange for the whale reproductive organs. It's all, as with everything Illustra does. And David, thank you for working with them through all these years as a producer, science fact checker, and all that you do. Every one of their videos, it seems like each one is more stunning than the previous ones.
Well, we have a lot of fun, and it's my pleasure to work with them. And speaking of what you were just talking about, I see this phenomenon all the time where they find fossils that push back the big squeeze, like you call it, earlier and earlier, less time to have more complexity evolve.
Right, exactly. And so the initial timeline was designed to tell a story, and that timeline gets squeezed every month. It's getting squeezed, often in significant ways, like they had Tiktaalik, and they said Tiktaalik was the first tetrapod where it evolved so that it could walk on four limbs on land. And then they find a track from, I forget how many, 10 million years before Tiktaalik with the footprints, fossilized footprints.
Right, the footprints found in Poland.
Yeah, and so there goes Tiktaalik, you know. So the big squeeze, they're getting squeezed in every direction, and all the soft tissue adds to the intensity. So we're really almost about out of time. Maybe real quickly, let's talk about biomimetics and then all the medical and moral issues you cover. Biomimetics, these secular scientists are looking at spider silk And to improve our cell phone cameras, they're looking at insect eyes. So you'd think we'd be better than the bugs by now, but the bugs have better cameras than our cameras.
Well, we might have smartphones with bug eye cameras in them someday.
Yeah, that's right. And they've been working for a while to replicate spider silk. And we've done a show on spiders, Fred Williams and I, that was just stunning. But they're getting a lot better at replicating spider silk.
Yeah, a researcher, a chemist, and an engineer got together and figured out a way to, and the way they did it was by imitating the way the spider does it.
Mm-hmm. And that's happening.
It's not as good as spider silk, but they're getting closer. So yeah. That's something to look forward to.
And this is an entire industry of biomimetics where we are mimicking the creator's design.
Oh, it's all over the place. It's a huge trend in science.
Yeah.
I think people who, creationists and intelligent design advocates, should really celebrate this because it's all looking for design in nature.
Oh, yeah. And even the latest breakthrough with cancer treatment, they're even starting to use the word cure, some of the world's leading oncologists with a targeted antibodies, immunological attack where they're teaching your body to use your own immune system to target tumors. And I don't know if you've looked into it, but David, the leukemia studies where like 97% of all the advanced leukemia sufferers were cured.
Yeah, it's amazing what's happening. And I kind of wonder if maybe they're teaching the body to remember something it had before that it forgot through mutations.
Well, yeah, we've done quite a series of shows on this. In fact, rsr.org/targeted antibodies. But yeah, no, they are exactly using the system God designed. But our cancer cells are our own bodies. They're not like foreign invaders. They're our own cells that are out of control. And so our immune system tends to not recognize them. So we give it a little hint. We say, look at this. This is a problem. Then it goes to town.
Yeah, well, actually, the body is fighting cancer all the time. We get cancer every day, but
yeah.
The immune system, when it's working right, usually finds it and destroys it.
Great point.
But maybe it's just not as capable as it was in Adam
yes,
and Eve.
Yes, I think that's exactly correct. And it's another form of biomimetics in a way, because we're using our immune system to help people overcome severe, severe advanced cancer. David, my co-host from Mondays, Doug McBurney, and I went to a banquet up in Boulder, Colorado, just 2 months ago for a little girl, Zeta. Her body was filled with tumors. I mean, it went from her pelvic through her abdomen to her right lung, her left lung. It was everywhere. And they said, we can't operate. We can't do anything. It's over. And her father is looking for what hospice to put her in. And at the last moment, they created a targeted antibody study just for her. Went through the FDA, the whole thing. And we show the scans of her body before and 3 weeks later. The tumors are like 97% gone.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. There was a story I heard about a medical doctor with brain tumors, and he was treated with immunotherapy with programmed T cells into his brain,
yes.
And the tumors just vanished.
Yes.
He was given 2 months to live, and he's
yeah.
doing well.
I think his case was the one where they put it in his blood and it wasn't getting to his brain. They injected it right into his brain.
Yes.
And
that's the one.
Yeah. One guy, lung cancer. This is in England. It had metastasized to his lymph nodes. They said it's over. He checked into hospice. They put him on this targeted antibody study. 2 weeks later, he went home. This is
yeah.
not make-believe. He went home. He said, as far as I'm concerned, I'm completely cured.
Well, I think we should caution our listeners that it doesn't seem to work for everybody yet. So there's still a lot to learn. But there are these
yes.
amazing cases out there that are just almost like medical miracles.
Yes. So thank you for that word of caution. And again, I'll say it because it's so important. But at rsr.org/targeted antibodies, we link to all the studies just for one targeted treatment. There are over 100 studies currently ongoing. And that's just one of the many treatments.
And yeah, I follow this myself because I have a slow-growing form of cancer in my liver. So,
You do?
Very, very personally involved in this.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm hopeful that this development is going to help millions of people.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, back to biomimetics, I found another case where your own earwax has been studied by an engineer who found that it can make a perfect air filter and water filter. So that was interesting. And then there was another one who looked at a pine cone and developed a biologically inspired symmetric bidirectional switch because pine cones can flex in different temperatures and moistures. And they actually found one in a fossil that was still capable of movement, even though they say it's over 16 million years old.
Oh, come on. I got it. That's in this article right here.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's just all stunning. So pine cone, 16 million years old. It was like the fossil tooth. They said if they took the fossil tooth and put it into a horse, it would probably work.
Yeah.
And it's far more advanced than current teeth of grazers because the minerals in our teeth, they're multiple minerals. They wear down at different rates depending on how hard they are. And so these fossil teeth had many more minerals, the greater variation than modern grazers' teeth, so that the teeth would always be sharp at shredding whatever they're eating.
Yeah, I think we've actually lost capabilities that earlier creatures had. Like John Sanford says, through genetic entropy and mutation accumulation, our ancestors probably had capabilities that we don't have today.
Yeah, John Sanford Cornell, geneticist. Okay, then our last topic, three separate articles you write about the Nazi medical experiments and the effort underway today in Germany to identify some of the victims, which is awesome, devastating but awesome. And then the adult stem cells that are being used instead of embryonic stem cells. And then the scientists who are mad that they don't want to lose their harvested baby parts. So maybe we could end the show with those three topics.
Sure. And our listeners are free to look up the details in any one of those. They're just published this month on Creation Evolution Headlines, Krev.info.
Well, the fact that the Nazis, the horrific experiments they did, and it's now, I mean, these are mainstream science sources that are reporting on this astounding effort underway to identify some of the victims from brain scans. And
yeah, they're trying to recreate the stories of victims who were euthanized, you know, the unfit who were put to death because they were not perfect human beings. And yet they're trying to recreate the personal stories of some of these victims as sort of a penance for what they did.
Yeah, which is very worthwhile. And this is reported in Nature and in the journal Science. And what's amazing is that they ask, you know, how could this have happened? Because these scientists, these were world-renowned scientists.
Yeah, these were not just, Nazi low-life people rounded up off the street to do these experiments. These were well-integrated into German society. They were very good researchers of international standing. And they continued to have their jobs long after the war.
Yeah, and as we have pointed out, for example, the mayors of the cities throughout Germany, some of them had been there for literally decades as the mayors. So they weren't Nazis, but they all worked together to euthanize about 200,000 Germans before they gassed a single Jew in a concentration camp. The medical community, the doctors, the scientists, they gassed children who were handicapped. Children, one boy was a bedwetter. They euthanized him. They killed him because he was a bedwetter.
Yeah, you remember Ben Stein toured the Hadamar facility where that happened, and the docent leading the tour told him that they justified it on the basis of Darwinism.
Of course. And, you know, any atheist listening to the show right now, David, they just screamed and swerved out of their lane on the highway. And they say it's absolutely unacceptable to relate Nazi atrocities to Darwinism. And so then we asked them, well, what if the Nazis said they were doing it because of Darwinism? What if it's the testimony of the leading Nazis? How about then? And still they reject that it's acceptable even to mention it. They would silence all of that scholarship.
Well, this was in the film with the tour guide saying that herself. You know, it wasn't Ben Stein putting that in her mouth.
Oh, right, exactly. That was expelled. No intelligence allowed. A great film. Oh, by the way, David, back then we contacted the biggest chain in Colorado. They were going to show it at one of their theaters in our state. Mm-hmm. So we said, if you guys will show it at every theater in your chain in Colorado, then we will hold a movie marathon, American Right to Life, and we will watch every showing on opening weekend. And so we, including me, sat through 15 showings of Expelled on opening weekend. They showed it on all their screens.
Wow.
So that was a lot of fun. All right, so adults.
What's amazing about this story, though, is, you know, to see the penance about what the Nazis did, and yet the blatant disregard for the unborn today and the baby body parts that they want access to, which is very similar.
Oh, what a great, absolute great point. Yeah, it's just devastating what they do to unborn children, and they intentionally don't see it. You know, in Germany, you needed 3 doctors to euthanize someone. They had a sign. And we have their paperwork. They were meticulous.
Mm.
And even the case that I mentioned of the boy who was a bedwetter, and that's written down as the reason. And
oh, my goodness.
And when we went to Israel the first time, we were devastated to hear our guide tell us, we asked about abortion law, and she said, well, abortion is legal here, but you need 3 doctors to sign off on it. And we were just stunned by that. So
wow.
It was the same in Colorado when we first decriminalized abortion in 1967. Okay, so now they don't need embryonic stem cells for the scientific research and therapy.
Yeah, I've reported several times about how these induced pluripotent stem cells are just as good as embryonic stem cells. And that's where all the action is in the adult stem cells, not the embryonic stem cells.
Right.
And yet they still want their embryos.
Yeah, California had a ballot initiative a few years back where Republican Schwarzenegger, I think he plugged it. And it was, we are going to fund not just stem cell research. It was specifically embryonic stem cell research.
Right. That $3 billion initiative, which California couldn't afford in the first place, but they were... For all these tear-jerking commercials about people who would be saved by these cells.
Like Christopher Reeves and so on.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And nothing ever came of the embryonic research. All the results are coming from adult stem cells.
Right. And even if killing one child would cure the whole world, you don't kill that child.
That's right.
But the reality is the embryonic cells were way inclined toward causing tumors and not working, and they're having tremendous success with adult stem cells.
Yeah, and in spite of this knowledge, Nature wrote this blistering editorial criticizing people who would stand in the way of their access to stem cells and fetal tissue. And you know what they call fetal tissue?
What's that?
Controversial material.
Right, yeah.
Can you believe that?
Harvested baby parts. And so then
finally, body parts, controversial material, which they want to use for research.
Right. It's like the abortionists calling the baby POC, products of conception.
Yeah.
It's these euphemisms. And then the scientists who are upset, they don't want to lose their harvested baby parts. And the whole country, much of the world knows about this now because of those viral videos that were just phenomenal. In fact, I'd like to embed our own. It's a 2-minute video Real Science Radio put out. David, you may not have seen it. It's on our YouTube channel. It's called The Worst Abortion Video Yet. It is video from inside of a clinic. It's a still living fetus being manhandled and twisted. Of course,
it dies.
It's absolutely horrific.
Oh, boy.
Of course, incredibly powerful, incredibly important. But utterly devastating.
Well, in this editorial, Nature actually justifies Planned Parenthood's Houses of Horror and what they did in these recordings. And they talk about anybody who criticizes that as being anti-science, and they finger Republicans and living in a fantasy world. I mean, it's just terrible what they say.
Yeah.
And put that side by side with what the Germans are doing in penance to the victims of the Holocaust.
Right. Because one day, just as the killing of the Jews was stopped and as the owning of black slaves was stopped, one day the dismemberment of unborn children will be stopped, and history will condemn all those who advocated the killing of even a single child.
Yeah, and just like in Nazi days, it was leading scientists that were involved in that. It's today's leading scientists that are involved in the killing of unborn babies.
Yep, exactly. All right, David Coppedge, what an honor, David, to speak with you. And I agree, your website, Creation Evolution Headlines, crev.info, crev.info, is the most information-rich, newsworthy creationist website out there, constantly updated with the most amazing developments. So thank you for that labor of love you put into that work.
Well, thank you very much. My pleasure, and I hope your listeners will take advantage of reading the material we put out almost every day.
All right, and once again, we'll link to your site. Thank you, David. So David Coppedge, in fact, his father, James F. Coppedge, wrote the book Evolution, Possible or Impossible, which is the basis for a new film out by Illustra Media called Origin. And so we just interviewed the producer of that film, Ladd Allen. What a great show that was. So if you missed that, you want to go back and listen to that interview. But if you go to our website, rsr.org, you'll see this show and the show summary, and you'll get links to these other resources. So this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the hand.